This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Welcome to episode 153 of What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
I'm John.
Why'd you look at me like that?
Well, it was, you weren't doing your prospector voice, but you were trying to kind of be a little cheerleaderish, I guess?
I got a sore throat.
Yeah, no, because you were also waving your hands in the air. Nobody could see that, but you were like, oh, look at me, everybody pay attention to me.
They couldn't see it, but now they can, because you told them all.
Yeah.
Anyways, this is pretty significant. It's March 20th, 2019. The pilot episode of this show dropped March 20th, 2016. So it's our three-year anniversary.
Time flies, huh?
3 years, right? Craziness.
3 years and we're only up to episode 153. That just seems like we're slacking.
Well, you know, we missed a couple weeks.
Yeah, here and there.
Three, to be precise.
Only three?
Well, three times 52 is 156.
Yeah.
So I missed three episodes along the way. It's not bad.
Yeah.
My son will be four tomorrow, so my youngest.
I was going to say, you have two sons.
So time does, you know.
You're like Tatooine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I went there.
Yeah, I saw that. I heard that. Anyhow, so that's where we're at.
Nice. Better?
Yeah.
Okay.
I deleted some stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what'd you watch this week?
Well, I got hooked on a new show, which is an old show, but it's kind of new to me. And I'd seen clips of it pop up here and there on like Facebook or Twitter, this, that, or whatever. And so I started watching it, and I've watched like 20 something episodes now.
Oh, huh.
Because they're half hour.
Yeah.
And it's addicting as shit.
Really?
Letterkenny? Never seen it?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
It's never heard of it.
It's a Canadian series. It started back in 2016, I think.
Okay.
And it was like little webisodes type thing, little short episodes or clips or whatever it is. And it takes place in it's called Letterkenny because the town they're in is in Letterkenny, Ontario, Canada, which is a fictional town, but it's based on this comedian, the creator, his hometown, I guess.
Okay.
And essentially you have your little factions of people. You have your skids. There's a lot of Canadian terms. I may not get them all right. You have your skids, which is like your druggies. You have the hicks or rednecks, which is the main person, Wayne and his friends and his sister. You have the degens, which I don't know what they are, because I think degenerates, but that's not what they are. But they're from up north, but they hate them. And so you have all these factions, and then you have the First Nations people, which they just call Indians.
I was going to say that sounds pretty native.
And essentially, it's about this guy and his sister and his buddies and the people. It says 5,000 people live in Letterkenny. The words letter and the name Kenny put together is one.
Okay.
5,000 people live in Letterkenny. These are their problems. And there's a lot of – it's a very dialogue-heavy show with a lot of quick wit.
Mm-hmm.
And long conversations about nothing, kind of. So I kind of really enjoy that because I like – that conversational type stuff.
Yeah.
And, it's unique. Wayne is the toughest guy in town, and he's always got to prove he's the toughest guy in town, so he gets in a lot of fights.
Does he really, though? Does he have to prove it?
People approach him.
Oh, okay.
And it's a thing, like, the phone will ring, he'll answer the phone, and this guy is very, like, monotoned and straight-laced, and he always wears, like, a plaid or flannel shirt. Long sleeve, you know, his jeans and his boots, and he has his dogs, and he's, you know, it's the really kind of awkward mannerisms.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a reputation, and like he'll answer the phone and be like, hello, okay, don't come down the laneway, stay off the property. No, stay at the top of the laneway, don't come on the property. And he hangs up the phone, he goes and sits down, and he's like, and then he says fight, but it's a word they use for fight. And they have their own, like, I feel like they have their own made-up verbiage that they use as well. Anyway, so then he goes outside and he unbuttons his cuffs on his shirt, and then he gets to fighting, and the fights don't last long. And then he goes back to sitting down, smoking, and having a beer with his friends. I mean, I don't know. It's pretty funny, and it's like six episodes a season, and like the seasons connect, but then they started doing like holiday specials in between. So like they did like St. Patrick's Day, a Valentine's Day, a Halloween, you know. And one season takes place completely in the winter. So they go ice fishing and sledding. And of course, oh, hockey is a big thing. I don't know. It's just, it's a fun show and I recommend it.
Okay.
Because I've watched a bunch of episodes. And I was just reading like before season six, they got picked up for like 40 more episodes or something absurd like that.
Hmm.
But evidently it's pretty popular up north. It's on, I've been watching it on Hulu. And it's on Crave TV up there.
Okay.
And they drop the F-bomb a lot. So, yeah, there's 41 episodes currently. And I'm in the high 20s right now. And they're 23 minutes to 30 minutes. It debuted in 2016 on Crave. It's also on the Comedy Network. And, yeah, it takes place in Ontario. It's won some awards up in Canada for Best Comedy Series. October 2017, the series received a commitment of 40 more episodes. So there's, I don't know, at least 20 more coming they haven't made yet.
If they got renewed for 40, wouldn't there be 40 more coming?
No. Back in 2017. So they've already, have already come out.
I got you.
Yeah, some of those have already come out. So, yeah. Yeah, so they had the first two seasons, and then they did a St. Patrick's Day special, season three, Halloween special, season four. And I'm on season four right now. So I still have the Easter special, season five, the Christmas special, season six, and then the Valentine's Day special. I got a lot to go then. But I don't know. It's just funny. It's funny.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, and it started out with Wayne and his sister, Caddy. And he's a very protective of his sister. They call him the natives, not Indians, the natives. He's very protective of his sister, even though she's kind of a slut.
Okay.
Anyone that disparages her. It's almost kind of like, remember the episode of Married with Children when they're at the movie theater and Kelly's like a boyfriend's there with another girl and she just goes and sits down and goes, "Daddy, beat him up." "Yes, honey." And he just gets up and goes and starts beating the crap out of the guy.
I don't remember that, but I can picture
it. Yeah. It's that similar, you know, like someone disparages a sister, he goes and takes care of him. And Wayne has a set of rules that he lives by, which is hilarious. I don't know. There's something about the show. It's charming as fuck. I really enjoy it. Oh, and just a heads up, I have something to talk about later from a show I watched. So this definitely will be an explicit episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there was ever any question of that.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Ever.
Yeah.
In fact, it almost seems like it's a race now to see which one of us causes me to have to flip that explicit switch. I think Martin should just put it on by default. Like, just it should default. Always be a yes.
Yeah, probably. Oh, here's something that's fun. They're doing a live tour now. So, if Letterkenny.
Oh.
So, if they ever come around, we'll be going. I'm just going to drag you along.
Okay.
So. Yeah. And they have their own beer now. Like, it's really blown up in Canada, where it's really blown up there, and it's spreading down here. Because I know a few other people that have watched or watching it. Like, they even have their own beer that they drink on the show.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's become quite popular. You should definitely watch some.
I'm not sharing your level of enthusiasm because I haven't seen it. I've never even heard of it.
So. Yeah, no, absolutely. But I'm just saying that, yeah, you should definitely watch some. Yep.
So aside from that, what else did you watch?
Well, I watched another brand new show.
Okay.
On Hulu. Called Shrill.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. So.
The article that I saw said what they get right and what they get very, very wrong about Trolls.
I don't know. It feels pretty right, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Let's see here. It's based on a book, apparently, called Shrill, Notes from a Loud Woman by Lindy West.
Okay.
Which I don't know who that is. But Adi Bryant, she's on Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. She's been on there quite a while, I guess. She's the star. Described the show follows Annie, described as a fat young woman who wants to change her life, but not her body. Annie's trying to make it as a journalist while juggling bad boyfriends, sick parents, and a perfectionist boss, while the world around her deems her not good enough because of her weight, and she starts to realize that she's as good as anyone else and acts on it. Let's see here. Elizabeth Banks and Lorne Michaels are executive producers on the show, actually.
Okay.
And, yeah. So I watched this again because, I don't know, it was a half hour, 20 minutes, so I threw it on.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally, I put it on at work while I was watching, doing some work. Watched all six episodes, like, right in a row.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you should definitely check it out.
Okay. There's
some good funny parts in it. But I have to bring this one up, this one part up. She's doing a review of a buffet at a strip club that her boss assigned her to. And so it's daytime, like in the middle of the week. So there's like nobody there.
Mm-hmm.
And all the strippers are there. And there's a lot of cursing, of course, in this. So she's like kind of trying to talk to them, but it's a little awkward. She's like, I don't know how you guys wear thongs. I think it'd be really weird to have that like stuck up your butt like that. And this one woman goes, they say, well, you got to wax your anus. What? Yeah, if you don't wax your anus, it don't work. Why would you have to? I don't understand. Why would you have to do that? And she goes, let me put it this way. You ever cleaned up pudding on a flat surface, like on a table? Cleans up real nice. Now imagine cleaning up when it fell on the lawn. I had to pause it. I was laughing so hard. And I'm like, probably shouldn't be watching this at work. That's kind of the worst of the dialogue. But yeah.
I think your work is probably one of the few places that would be acceptable.
Probably. But yeah, so I laughed pretty fucking heartily at that. And there was a lot of moments in the show where I laughed pretty well. And then got pissed off at her boyfriend or her boss or whatever it was. So, but yeah, it was interesting.
Right.
If they had another season, I'd watch it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's it's brand new, so chances are good that it'll get renewed. It's a Hulu show. They'll usually let their stuff go for about three seasons and then cancel it.
Seems accurate.
Yeah.
What'd you watch?
Well, I'll save till the end the Passage, because I did finally catch up on that.
Perfect.
So, got about, what, three episodes of that to talk about?
You have the final three episodes to discuss.
I
accidentally deleted my notes when I was cleaning up from the week before.
Oh, outstanding.
But I'll make it work.
I'm sure you can find a link to a write-up of it.
I'm sure I could.
Supergirl, did you watch that this week?
I did. I didn't watch Flash.
Oh, that's too bad.
Flash is on Tuesday night.
Yep.
It's now Wednesday.
Yep.
I haven't had time to watch it.
Oh, okay.
I had to choose between watching Flash or The Rookie.
Mm-hmm. You made the right choice.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Because actually, this I had seen like the commercials, how it's supposed to be, how The Rookie was supposed to be such an awesome episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to message you. And when I got home this morning from work, I was like, oh, I should message Sean to see if he's had time to watch it. Or if he's going to watch it before we record. Because if he is, I want to make sure I watch it. I went to bed. When I woke up, you sent me a message. Make sure you watch The Rookie if you have time. All right, I don't have to message you that anymore. So I went downstairs and watched it. But that, again, I watched a lot of Letterkenny. So that's what kind of took up most of it. It was, I have no regrets.
No.
It was really good. Supergirl, I did watch it.
Okay.
We finally see Lex Luthor.
A lot.
What was your favorite part of the episode?
Probably the very end when he gets up out of the chair and screams,
Miss Tessbacher!
Yep.
Dude, that's my only note. When Lex yelled, Miss Tessbacher, I popped big time. That was the best part of the entire episode.
He was comically over the top. Not as in like humorous, but as in like comic book villain ridiculous.
Oh, massively.
Like when we see the flashback to him having Lena strapped to the chair and he's talking to her and you hear the helicopter outside and it's like, you know, this is the police. Put your hands up. And he just presses a button on his watch and the chopper blows up.
Yeah.
And he's just like, anyway, getting back to the, like, so nonchalant about just vaporizing it. Or at the end there when he gets up and all the guards come in and he presses the button and all the little panels open up with the lasers that like crisscross and shoot all of them.
And kill them all. Yes.
It's ridiculous. It was absolutely stupid, and I loved it.
Yeah, I loved it too. I
fucking loved it.
I did too.
John Cryer did a great job.
I'm sitting there going, man, if they cancel Supergirl, But they bring back Superman. John Cryer needs to be Lex Luthor on the Superman show.
But yeah, they had a lot of good nods where she was like, you know, it's your fault that you poisoned yourself with kryptonite trying to beat him, and now you need black kryptonite in order to live, you know, because he basically gave himself cancer.
Yeah.
But that's a Lex Luthor thing, you know?
Yep.
Anything to stop Superman. He is not a man!
Yep.
He's a false god! You know?
So much better than Jesse Eisenberg or whatever the fuck his name is.
Fuck him.
Yeah.
That little
better than Kevin Spacey. Twat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, pff.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was, you know, he'd do the cool, calm, and collected, and he'd be very calm. And then to just like, he is not a man! It was great watching him just like flip his lid over stuff like that.
Yeah, I was very happy to see his introduction. Like when he first brought him, I was like, all right, let's see what happens.
Well, when they first announced it, you know, and they were like, oh, yeah, John Cryer is going to be him. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
All I can think of is him recently in 2.5 Men, and he's just a sad sack.
Yeah.
But he did a really good job, you know, and played, once again, you know, Lex Luthor, he played the long game. He played the long con, and he's been helping Lena all along. He's been getting her the supplies that she needs to test out her thing. And he orchestrated the hit on Jimmy.
Yes.
Because he knew that she wasn't pushing forward fast enough, and he needed a guinea pig, and he's like, well, I'll get her ex-boyfriend shot, and then she'll have to do it. I mean, he had it all planned out. Granted, it's a show. Somebody wrote him as that, but it was still nice to see that they did that credit to him.
I really love the fact that Otis is his henchman, because he's a perfect Lex Luthor henchman.
Yes, he is.
He's just, yeah.
Yeah.
You can just see one. All right, boss.
He's okay, dumb. Boss. Yeah. He's big and dumb and okay. Yep.
Yep.
It was great. When he screamed Miss Tessmacher, though, I'm like,
oh my God.
I'm like, thank you.
Yes.
And then she comes scurrying right over.
She's got bad guy outfit on.
And Lena's like, how long? Always.
Yes, exactly. Because when they introduced her, it was just like, but no, Miss Tessmacher's Lex's little woman. This doesn't make any sense.
Why is she a little, like, secretary for James? What the hell?
Yeah.
No, he planted her there. Just keep an eye on everything.
That legit was the absolute best part.
It really was. And it was
the gun.
Yep.
That was awesome.
And then she goes to shoot Lena, and he's like, eh, that won't be necessary.
Yep.
He just walks away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Turns on his little lasers, kills everybody. And the music that they had was even that comical, almost Gene Hackman type.
Yes.
Oh, it was great. Really appreciated that. I even like the stuff that was going on in the background. The Supergirl and the Martian Manhunter, you know, actually being the Martian Manhunter.
Yes.
And watching him and Manchester Black fight, you know, Manchester had the staff, had the connection to him, so kept putting the images in his head of, you know, Kara and Alex as zombies, corpses, basically. Then showing him his kids. It was good. And Manhunter killed him. Like, fucking destroyed him.
Yeah, it really did, which was kind of very surprising, right?
Yep. I can't remember. I don't think it was this episode. I think it was the last. The last episode, I gotta go back in time for a second and just say, I really have to give props to the fight between Hat and Brainy.
Yes.
Because everybody else is doing all their normal arrow type stuff, you know, with the punches and the kicks. And watching, you know, Brainy always has his hands behind his back. It's a very drunken master kind of thing, you know.
Yep.
And then you had Hat, and both of them were just like, it was very slow and deliberate. It was like watching a Jackie Chan kind of thing.
Yes.
It very much reminded me of that. And like the whole time that they're flipping the hat and flipping and, you know, putting it on the head.
Very Jackie Chan-ish
as well. It was very Jackie Chan-ish. And I really appreciated that. I felt like somebody was like, these two need to have a different kind of fighting style. And it worked out really well. So I had to go back and give props to that because I forgot to mention it last week. But yeah, this week's episode was really good. Alex was flipping out on Kara because, you know, James is going into surgery. We need you here. Why?
Right.
You know, I know that people always want to do that, but really, what good is she going to do? But then, of course, she's like, oh, I'm on a mission. She's like, what are you going to do? You're a reporter. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm helping John follow up on a lead. But yeah, if Lex, this is the problem though. Okay. If this episode had taken place like around maybe December, and Also, by the way, this is going to be my argument for Flash as well. If this argument had taken place several weeks back, when we went to the mid-season finale, can you imagine a mid-season finale like that? Seeing Lex Luthor show up, having the Miss Tessmacher moment, him walking off, and then knowing, oh, when it comes back, Lex is around. Instead, we've got, what, 5-6 episodes left of the season?
Yeah.
We've already established the Children of Liberty and you know, the menagerie hat thing is over. And so it's almost like we're winding down the season and we get this.
Yeah, this was the best part of the season so far.
Yeah, and it came very late. Yep. But again, Flash did the same thing this week. And I know you haven't watched it, but they did the same thing where it was an okay episode. We got to know a bit more about the future Cicada, and she does kick a lot of ass. By the way, did you ever watch that show, Falling Skies?
No.
Okay. She was on there. I knew I recognized her from somewhere. She was one of the characters on there. But she's a good, compelling villain, has her own reasons. And at the end of the episode, we get the big reveal. They finally find out about Nora and Thawne. That's all I'll say about it.
No, just go ahead and tell me. Because they're not going to have another new episode of Flash until April's like mid-April now.
Oh, okay. Well, so this was the most compelling part of the episode was, you know, Nora's finally – she had talked to Thawne in the beginning, and he like looks up at this countdown clock that's counting down like 12 hours, and he's like, it's too late now. She's like, what can I do? And he's like, tell your father. And then they go through the whole episode. She never says anything. And then everybody's like, we got to go get a drink. You know, we're kind of – we had a rough day. And yep. She's standing there, and they're like, Nora, you coming? And she's like, And Sherlock comes out because he discovered a hidden compartment in Wells's wheelchair, you know, from season one. Realizes that the notebook that she keeps with all the strange writing in it is Thawne's handwriting. So, because he sees him write in this video that he left for himself. So, Sherlock comes out, and it was – unfortunately, it reminded me of – you know in Ace Ventura – at the very end when he's like revealing it and you've got the Lieutenant Einhorn is standing there and she's just like the whole time, just like kind of twitching like she had to do something on camera. She couldn't run. So she was left to just stand there, you know, and Sean Young, brilliant actress, forced to just stand there while he monologues for a while. That's what happened here. Sherlock monologues and, you know, every now and then Nora would be like, no, please don't. No, don't. But he basically says, you know, blah, 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 I figured this out. She's been working with Eobard Thawne. And she looks over and I wanted to say Candace because it's Candace Patton, but Iris is like, say it's not true. And she's like, and Barry goes, she can't. And what I didn't even see coming was Barry just looked at her and then just, boom, threw her in the tunnel, locked her in a cell.
Really?
Yeah, just, boom, dropped her right in there and then started walking away. Didn't even talk to her, just walked right away.
So
and she's like,
he used his speed.
Yep. And he's like, she's like, I'm sorry, Dad, I should have told you. And he goes, yeah, you should have. And he just walks away. That's it.
Wow, that's actually quite surprising.
Well, she was working with Eobard Thawne the whole time. Yeah. You know, that's what he knows now. So he can't trust her. But, you know, the Flash, they're usually like, well, let's talk it out and let's – nope. It's just like, boom, you're in the tunnel. Bye.
Hmm.
Which it's always convenient that they have an open pod waiting right there at the end of that
one tunnel. That's probably set up that way. Remember the little short they did, the online thing where it showed them feeding the people in the tunnel?
Yes.
They talked about that.
Big belly burger.
Yeah.
And the toilets.
Yeah.
But again, so we get that reveal. We've seen the new Cicada. It's all exciting.
We've got six episodes. Where'd she show up? How'd she come on?
Still not sure about that. You remember the time sphere from season one that they built for Thawne so he could go back to the future? They found that outside of their, what did they call it? Some kind of play on words about Star Labs and storage. So it was like storage or something like that. But basically they thought that somebody had stolen it because the time sphere was sitting out in the woods near there.
Yeah.
But it was also still inside the, storage place. And so they did a time travel test where they found the one out in the woods and they stood by it and they were like videotaping, you know, they're like, okay, you know, FaceTiming. And they took the one that was in storage and they scratched it. And as they were scratching it, they saw the one in the woods get the scratch on it. And they're like, oh, so that's the one from the future. So somebody steals it in the future and brings it back here. And they're thinking that's how she came back.
That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really appreciated that part. But it was actually, it was a good episode. But again, we're just, it's too late. Why are you doing this stuff now? Arrow did the same thing. You know, they showed all the stuff going on in the future and they've got an actually compelling story going on in the future. And I really found myself caring about these characters, and it's almost the end of the season. Oliver's gone. We don't know where. Nobody will say anything. We got to see...
In the future he's gone, or currently?
In the future. But we get to see, like, we start the episode with Felicity giving birth to Mia, and then we watch a montage of them in a cabin in the woods, and Mia getting trained by Nyssa, of all people. Not Oliver. And we get to watch her growing up, getting trained by Nyssa, and then being handed a bow and arrow. And then she pouts because Felicity's been lying to her and hacking and being a vigilante and blah, 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 blah. But they actually had some really cool, compelling stuff. They've got a system in place now called Archer, but it's essentially the computer from Person of Interest. So, you know, it sees everything, it tracks everybody, which is a cool concept.
Well, yeah, that's why it works so well on Person of Interest the first time around.
But see, in the future, the glades are actually completely walled off, like this 30, 40-foot high wall all around the glades. And the glades is the good spot, but that's where Archer is, and that's where this private military force is kind of keeping the peace. Everything else around Star City is just garbage. Like, people are dying, they're starving. So Renee is the mayor of the glades and comes up with this plan with this Galaxy One corporation, you know, the military guys, they're going to bomb Star City, like destroy it like they did with the Glades in the first season, and destroy everything so that they can rebuild it in the image of the Glades and put the Archer system everywhere. It was actually kind of fun to watch. I enjoyed it being all in the future, but we'll see. So there.
All right. Let's see here.
I did go back and watch Superstore. The step trapping one.
Yeah. Right?
It wasn't bad. I mean, it was pretty predictable. The only part that I really liked was Steve Agee and the other guy there doing the things like, you know, somebody put hot deer urine all over their break room. How did they know that it was hot deer urine? How couldn't you know that it's hot deer urine? You know, their interactions were pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was a mediocre episode at best.
I didn't watch this week's episode. Oh, no, The Kids Were All Right was on this week. I didn't have time to watch.
Okay.
You didn't watch The Blacklist.
Correct.
It's okay. You know, like, okay, this is weird. You know, usually people are sentenced to death, but they're on death row for like 20 years.
And oh, yeah.
Apparently that's not Red's option because I'm not going to tell you this episode is the, oh, by the end of the episode, they're going to execute him episode.
They kind of put a speed on that, huh?
Well, I think it's because he pled guilty maybe.
Yep.
And so but because they remember how they said multiple times, because of his plea, whatever, he's not allowed to appeal it.
Right, right.
So he has no appeals.
True.
Then they have no reason to prolong.
I guess.
The sentence.
I mean, when was the last time you heard about somebody sentenced to death and then, like, within a week they're put to death?
That's all state level. When's the last time you heard about someone being federally sentenced to death by the federal government?
I'm pretty sure the federal government doesn't do the death penalty.
They do.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. Like,
oh, he's Googling it.
Federal government death penalty. Let's see if it says when the last time. It can be handed down for treason, espionage, murder, large-scale drug trafficking, or attempted murder of a witness, juror, or court officer.
Wow.
As of 2018, all inmates under the federal death sentence were condemned for aggravated murder.
Okay.
It says executions performed by the federal government are infrequent compared to those performed by the state government.
They probably probably let the states handle it most times.
Yeah. Usually this is Wikipedia, so usually there's like a list.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And if you're lucky, you can catch it on a day when there's some kind of racist thread in there that somebody snuck in.
Yeah.
Because they're an asshole. Oh? You said oh.
Here we go. List of... This is real good. List of people executed by the United States federal government. Because, you know, why not?
I just want to know the most recent.
That's what I'm looking for. 2003.
That was 16 years ago.
Yeah. By Lewis Jones Jr., the rape and murder of Private Tracy McBride, Texas. Oh, prior to that was a Juan Raul Garza. And he's apparently some drug dealer who ordered the execution of a bunch of people. And then prior to that, June 11, 2001, Timothy McVeigh.
Mm.
For the 1995...
He sounds familiar.
Yeah. For the 1995 Oklahoma bombing of the federal building. So that took 6 years.
Yeah. And that was a very high-profile case.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not buying it. But I suppose it wouldn't make very compelling TV if he was sentenced to death and then, you know, they were like, well, we need 6 more seasons to...
Right. See, the murder happened in 1995 and he was executed in 2003. So, yeah.
That's, all right. That's
well, there we go.
8 years.
So, that yeah. So, that's not... So, what they're doing on Blacklist ain't the most accurate thing in the world. I don't know if it was on The Good Doctor. I haven't watched. Have they done a new episode of New Amsterdam since they did the winter one? Did you watch the winter one?
I did watch the winter
one. They got snowed in.
Yeah, I don't know if they've done another one since then. By the way, The Blacklist is coming back for season 7, so I don't think he's going to get executed.
Yeah, well, you wait till you watch the end of this episode. They let you think he's going to be. The Good Doctor, I don't know if he was even on from the time we watched last, talked about it until now.
Because
like you said last week, I don't know if people remember, the new episode was posted yesterday for us. Mm. But, you know, from the last episode to this episode, we've only had 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't had a lot of stuff that we could watch for normal weekly shows.
And I don't think Hulu had a new episode of The New Doctor or The Good Doctor or New Amsterdam.
Excuse me, I was hoping you were going to say Good Amsterdam. Pardon me. I did watch the waiting room episode of This Is Us.
Yeah. Interesting, huh?
Yeah. Kevin's an asshole.
Kevin really is an asshole.
You know, the more I watch this show, the more I hate the Pearson kids.
Told you, man. I say that quite regularly.
I know you do, and I don't know if you're being a bad influence on me for it. But,
maybe.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, honestly, like, he was a prick. I'll even tell you, I watched the most recent one that was just on last night.
Yep.
And, you know, he goes to therapy and starts cracking jokes. And Zoe actually looks at the therapist at one point and goes, look, I can see you're trying not to smile at him. I understand it. He's charming. He's funny. But the thing is, he's still an alcoholic.
Yeah.
So, he's not taking anything seriously.
No. He pisses me off.
Yeah.
Because he's one of those people who, he hasn't been given everything, but he's worked hard to be an actor on the show. But.
Again, last night's episode, he actually talks to somebody and she literally says that. She's like, you've gotten everything you've wanted in life.
Yeah.
Just by being you.
Right.
Just literally by being you and looking the way that you look, everything that you've ever wanted, you've gotten. So of course you'd feel entitled.
Yeah.
And
that's what pisses me off about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't watch Project Blue Book last week.
I think that's all over for the season, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. The wife and I, we're big fans of Oak Island.
Yes, you are.
We watched last night's episode before you came over. We just finished it up, and it was a great episode. Once again, Dan Blankenship, though, the old man.
I've never watched the show, so.
Right. He, a lot of what he did back in the 60s and 70s is what they're kind of working on now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, 95 years old. He passed away this week.
Oh.
Yeah, so when they talk about that on the show, Rick Lagina, who cries a lot anyways, I don't know how that man's going to make it through anything. Because he's going to be so sad. Because when Fred Nolan died, again, another old fellow that was on the island, I think the only one person that lives on the island now is Dave Blankenship, Dan's son. I don't think anyone else lives on the island anymore. Because I think it was like Fred Nolan, Dan, and Dave, basically. So, but anyhow, yeah, so he goes. But now when Fred died, Rick was pretty sad then because we lost a good connection to the island, blah, 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 blah. Now Dan, who they both love. Yeah. There's that. But
I watched another new show this week.
Okay, good, because I'm going through my list. I'm thinking, like, damn, I think I'm done.
Did you watch You're the Worst?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
No.
It was an okay episode. The best part was Lindsay making out with someone. I'll just say that.
Okay.
Because it was really weird the way that it came about. I watched a show called The Fix.
Okay.
There were two new shows that premiered this week. I watched The Fix and I taped The Village. I haven't watched that yet, but it came on after This Is Us.
Isn't The Village about raising someone?
I think so.
Because, you know, it takes a village.
Right. They said, if you like This Is Us, you should watch this. So, but they say that about a lot of stuff.
A lot of things now.
Boy, by the way, I just got to say, we'll talk about it next
week. Hold on. The Village follows residents of an apartment building in Brooklyn where the people who reside in the building have built and bonded a bonded family of friends and neighbors.
Okay. So it's not really a village.
Well, the whole building seemed to be working together to help Sarah raise her creative teenage son.
Oh, creative. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds bad.
Yeah, it does.
That sounds like they're going to give him some kind of mental disorder or something. Oh.
So it's like they're their own little village within this apartment building. So.
I will say, last night's episode of This Is Us was really good.
Okay.
But anyway, this new show is called The Fix. It's got Robin Tunney and a couple other people that you might recognize. Basically, this guy, very famous guy, his girlfriend died a few years ago. Everyone was convinced that he killed her, and jury found him not guilty. So Robin Tunney was the main investigator on it, and she feels like he got away with it. So she wants to take him down. So now it's years later, and new evidence has come to light. So they're going to take him down. They want to take him down. So it's her and her team versus this manipulative rich guy and his shark of a lawyer. And it was pretty good. The first episode was pretty compelling, you know, seeing some footage of the girlfriend who died and, you know, how she had a black eye and she said, he beat me, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, this was enough to get them a search warrant. But then the lawyer calls him up and he goes, hey, they're coming with a search warrant. Get rid of anything and everything that you can now. So it's got some deceptiveness. It's got some crime drama to it. It's going to be interesting, though, because it seems like it's just going to focus on them trying to get this one guy, which, you know, basically trying to get one person is an episode of Law and Order. So seeing them try to drag that out for a whole season, I don't know how it's going to work out.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it, but, you know, how these things, we've talked about it with other shows before. We go, how's this concept going to make a whole season?
Exactly.
And basically you're saying, oh, it's one court case, how they're trying to prove this guy's guilty? How's that going to take? They do that on an episode of Law & Order, for crying out loud.
Right. That's what I just said.
Right. Well, no, I'm agreeing with you. Oh, okay. Yeah, so it's, yeah.
Yeah. But you've got the twist that he's already been tried once, and they found him not guilty. So I would assume Double Jeopardy
okay, yeah,
is implied.
Yeah.
So now they have to get him on something else. So
it's kind of like they're trying to sounds like they got some inspiration from O.J. Simpson.
I was going to say, it does seem that way.
And the main character is
black.
Mr. Echo.
Yeah.
Was a tall, black, bald guy.
Yeah. I knew where you were going with that.
Yeah.
If they say that he went to USC, I'm done. So, yeah, the only two other shows that I've got, and honestly, I didn't watch any movies. The only other two shows that I've got are The Rookie
yep.
and The Passage.
Well, before we get to those two,
okay,
I'm listening to a podcast called Root of Evil,
okay.
and I can't recommend this enough.
Okay.
Yeah, are you familiar with the Black Dahlia, Elizabeth Short?
Yep.
Yeah, Unsolved Murder.
Yeah, they got a TV series. Getting good reviews.
And the TV series is kind of, this is kind of like a companion piece to it, but not at all. Like they, but that's how they built it. It was going to be a companion piece to this TNT network, you know, series. Mm-hmm. But no, because that's kind of
Chris Piney.
Fictional, based on these events, but we're going to put a huge fictional twist on it because the true story is weirder than fiction. I really can't recommend this enough. I mean, like this, the Hodel family, the suspicions, the twists, the turns, the are you freaking serious moments. My wife and I are both listening to it. The new episode drops every Wednesday, and it's like what I seek out to listen to Wednesday. Like, as soon as it's there, I'm like, I got to find an hour to listen to this, 40 minutes, whatever it is. So I can't recommend it enough. And, yes, I think there's 7-8 episodes in already for the podcast. There's only a few more left, but it's excellent.
Nice.
It's called Root of Evil. It's really, really good. These people were fucked up. Massively fucked up.
Hmm.
The Hodel family.
Right.
Yeah. So.
All
right.
Nice.
The Rookie.
So. I know we talk about certain, we have certain things that we go to all the time with The Rookie. One of them is that it's always enjoyable to see the opening gag, if you will.
Yes.
That has nothing to do with the rest
bumper.
Of the
yeah, the opening bumper.
We've said many times before, can't get over how much we like this show.
Yeah.
This episode kind of blows that away.
Yeah.
Like, I fucking love this show. And this is one of those shows that not only do I look forward to watching it every week, but I find myself, like today I was watching it at work, and I found myself hitting pause and looking down and going, Jesus Christ, I'm only halfway through the episode?
Yeah, there was a lot in this episode.
There was so much.
Yeah.
Holy God.
Yeah, the big thing for this episode is called Reversal Day, and it's when, and I've never heard of this, so I don't know if this is a real thing or not.
Right.
Internal Affairs apparently is out there purposely setting things up to see how people react.
Yeah, they impersonate criminals or they get people to impersonate criminals. They set up fake crimes.
They even, like, allegedly they emptied out a bank and filled it full of actors and took over as, like, they were robbing the bank to see how people responded and reacted to it. And, like, they got Mario Lopez to play himself in this episode, as, like, you know, hey, I can get you tickets to anything you want or whatever like that for running a stop sign to see if they would take a bribe from Mario Lopez.
Watching Bradford's response to him.
Yes.
You know, he's standing there and, of course, Chen is like starstruck. She's like, oh, my God, I watch you all the time. He's like, oh, it's nice to see a fan. And Bradford's like, you know, I wish I'd written it down. But, you know, he just basically like, you know, come on, look at it. Blah, blah, blah. And
then he kind of, for whatever reason, it clicks on him that this is a reversal setup.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts looking around and he sees the car and he heads over. And it's, of course, someone he has history with.
It's the woman who is investigating his wife.
Yeah.
And she blames him for letting her come to work high on drugs.
With a gun and this and that and everything. And so he goes back and he like.
Write him up.
Yeah.
He goes, write him up. And she's like, what?
Yeah.
And he just starts listing off these things. I mean, endangerment of animals.
That was the last one. I'm like, what the hell is that one? Yeah. Trying to deceive a police officer, attempting bribery. I mean, on and on.
Oh, my God. And I mean, he's just pulling these out of his ass as he's storming past them.
Yeah. Is he serious?
We never get to see if he was serious.
Because apparently Mario Lopez is on community service.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's the big thing is they all every call they go to, they're assuming it's an internal affairs setup.
Yep.
Brad, they even go into this drug house where this guy stepped in a bear trap was a booby trap. And so Bradford thought it was fake, and he goes to pull it open, and blood starts squirting, and he stops. And it's like, oh, shit, this is real.
Yeah, kudos to the makeup department, because it really looked like a snap bone. And
oh, yeah. And then Bradford's like, it's not my fault. It's internal affairs' fault for making me suspect this.
Yes.
Instead of treating this like a normal crime.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Bradford is a massive hard-ass, which he puts comedy in the show.
Mm-hmm.
A different type of comedy.
Exactly.
But at the same time, like, he would be the TO you would want.
Yes. Absolutely. And the that woman even says that at one point, the IA investigator, she looks at Chen, and she goes, you might want to think about getting another TO. I'd think about getting another TO if I was you. And she's like, yeah, well, you're not me, ma'am.
Ma'am, yeah. Respectfully. And then walks off, yeah. But yeah, no, like, just his, like, they give him a lot of the best, like, you know, obviously Nathan Fillion, his character Nolan's the star of the show.
Right.
So he has he gets like a lot of the big moments and a lot of things are surrounding him and this and that and everything. But for those almost Yoda-like monologues, Bradford has them.
Yep.
You know, like
for and he delivers them well.
Everything's a teaching moment, you yep. know. Just even like, you know, that scene at the end, even when they've got the roadblock set up and they're waiting for the bad guy to pull in because they've got tracking him and he's heading that way. And, you know, and Chen's just like, look, right now I don't need your, you know, this is a, use your grief for your blah, blah, blah. This is a teachable moment, crap, da, da, da. And he still delivers one.
Yeah.
Opposite of what she thinks he's going to say. And again, it's just like, wow. But yeah, like
it basically tells her grief is strong.
And, yes.
You know, use that.
And use that to make you a better cop because that's what she would have wanted. This yep. and that. But like, you know, it's kind of crazy, but like they really do give him the best lines and he has the best insights and like almost motivational stuff where it really makes you go like, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, the big thing this episode is during one, a standard, you know, this lady, this very richy, entitled, spoiled, like just obnoxious woman is pissed off because allegedly the valet damaged her car.
Destroyed her car.
And there's like a little, like a little nick on this door. And it's not even bad enough that's like an actual nick. It's more of like a, Nolan's like, that'll buff right out. There's nothing to worry about. You know, this is a civil issue.
That's what I loved is yeah. when his T.O. said that. She goes, this is a civil issue. No yeah. crime has been committed. I'm like, yes. Thank you.
Exactly. But then she pulls a knife and goes after the valet. So Nolan grabs her because restrains her. And the strap on her dress breaks.
Yep.
And now they're like, oh, crap, is this a... You know, is this one of those internal affair things? But Nolan didn't do anything wrong.
No. Nope.
And his T.O. assures him that. But who she is a drug boss's this drug
sixth largest gang in Los Angeles.
Yes, drug kingpin's son's girlfriend.
Yes. And I really liked it when the Sarge, just to jump ahead, when the Sarge said to him, he's like, yeah, your son pulled authorized a green light because his girlfriend yelled at him.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
And that's what happened is that she got mad. Mm-hmm. And so she threw a temper tantrum and they put a green light on Nolan, which basically means it's a hit.
Yeah.
They're calling it a green light, but this guy put a hit out on Nolan
mm-hmm.
and they attempt to kill him.
Fully automatic weapon.
Yeah. Over 200 rounds they lodged at his truck. Luckily he sees the guy coming at him and jumps out. And he's not injured at all. And then the next day, it's debate, should he show up for work or not? And some people are saying, like, oh, you shouldn't. Others are like, you should. This is what being an LAPD officer is all about. Mm-hmm. And you have to show them that you...
And to his credit, he doesn't say, you know, oh, I'm scared for my life. He says, I'm putting you all in yes. danger by being
and
around
in a six-foot radius of me is in danger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, anybody that I come near is going to be in danger.
But
so
basically, his captain's like, no, go to work. But you don't have to.
Right.
So he shows up, and the first person that stands to be like, you know, and show like that is Bradford.
Which was awesome.
Yeah, because like these are just rookie boots, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But when Nolan walks in, Bradford's the first one to stand up and be like, good.
Yeah, and then other people stand up, and then they all start applauding him. And
then his TO's like,
that's pretty badass.
This is all about your ego. And I totally see that coming from her.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, no, it's not. I'm scared to death, but like, this is...
Yeah, like somebody said, we can't let the criminals tell us how to do our job.
Right. And then the captain shows up and, like, he's riding with me for the day.
Yep.
And basically the rest of the force just go full on. And you see them arresting and breaking things up and on and on and on and on and on. And there's a moment in there where I'm like, why did they wait for this to happen to arrest all these people and break all this crime up, this and that and everything? And they address it.
They do that so much in the show. You think about these things, and you're like, why would they? And then they're like,
Chen's
wondering about this.
Well, if Vice knew about this last week, why didn't they break this up last week? And he's like, well, because, you know, we break up the small one, more pop up, blah, blah,
it's
blah.
It's whack-a-mole.
It's whack-a-mole. He goes, it makes no sense. However, in this case, this is what we want. We want to break up and disrupt as much as we can to hurt them to get them to drop this green light. So it's like... Oh, I'm so glad they explained it because so many shows don't explain it.
Right. It just looks like they're going at them with a vengeance.
Right.
But they were like, no, if we can disrupt enough of their businesses, right, then they'll see that it's not profitable for them to have a green light out,
yeah,
and they'll back off, then we can back off.
So then when the captain goes, like you talked about earlier, the captain goes to the prison to speak with the dad, the King leader.
Yep. Huh? King Midas.
Yeah. And he's like, look, I'm not here to make you a deal. Mm-hmm. But basically, this is what we've done. We've disrupted like 1 million. You know, we've hurt your – today alone, we've taken $4 million from you based on profits and, you know, arrested so many people. Just wait till we see what we do tomorrow. And the guy's like
– he starts naming other cities that they're going to.
Yeah, San Diego, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you need to call off this green light. And he's like, you got to understand, I just can't call it off. You know, it's got – he's got to do it and honor and this and that and everything. And he's – which – and the captain seems to respect that because he's playing the game with him about it. And he's like, yeah, I understand that. However, this is what we've done and this is what we're going to continue to do.
Yeah.
And so eventually he, you know, it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he tells him to call it off. But his son has other ideas. And the captain and Nolan are going to this routine burglary call, which as soon as they say it was routine, oh, green light or red light or whatever, red flag.
Yeah.
And they show up, and the house is clear, and then a flashbang explodes, and then the boss's son and two of his goonies are there, and they're handcuffed to chairs by the edge of the pool.
Yep.
And basically, the captain's like, you guys fucked up.
Dude, she's taunting him, straight up taunting him. Like, she's laughing at him. She's like, you dumb bastard.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, he's a rookie, and no offense, you know, that's no big deal.
Right.
But how many, what's my rank? And he's like, huh? And she goes, you're the leader of the sixth largest gang in L.A.
Yeah.
You should know what my rank is just by looking at my uniform. And he's
look at these bars.
It doesn't matter. And she goes, oh, look, two bars, a badge that says captain. Even your father wouldn't do this.
Yeah. And that actually did give him pause for a moment.
Yeah.
But, you know, before you take this too far, then he kicks her in the pool.
Yep.
And then Nolan's now panicking. And he's like, look, make a video with me and I'll apologize to her. And, you know, and the guy likes the idea of it.
He's like, you're going to get laid for weeks.
Yeah.
You got me all tied up like this, and I'm apologizing to her. You're going to look like a big man.
And so the guy, you know, okay, let's do it. And then he doesn't like what Nolan was saying. And then, of course, in the pool, the captain dislocates her thumb and gets the cuffs off and then comes out. And then I didn't expect this. Did you?
No.
Yeah.
No, it was like I expected her to come up like that, you know, and do the Jason Voorhees kind of like, you know, grabs the guy, drags him into the pool, shoots him underwater. He floats up. Then she pops back out. Boom, boom.
Kills the other guy and then gets into a shootout.
Which it was a sloppy shootout because, you know, Sonny Boy's running. And
she's in the pool.
Yeah. She's in the pool. Sonny Boy's running. So they're just like they're exchanging fire willy-nilly.
And all of a sudden she takes a round right in the neck.
Which, again, like – most shows would have gone for like a headshot, you know, an immediate, oh, that's a kill shot. But I mean, this was just a little, like a mosquito hit right in the neck. And she just kind of like pauses for a second and reaches up and touches it. There's no blood gushing out or anything. And she's just like, oh, you know, this look on her face like, oh, shit. And then she just sinks into the pool and she's done.
Yeah. Nolan manages to break the chair, gets himself uncuffed, pulls her out of the pool, starts to try to do CPR. Finally, backup shows up because they've obviously been missing. And they find Nolan sitting there with the captain dead. They're all upset, of course.
Dude, everybody's just like frozen. They're and just standing there. Some are crying. Some are just like, and all he can say is,
it's cold.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was cold.
So they have a nice procession where they put the flag on her and put her in the back of the meat wagon. And then, of course, the next day, it's like, look, you know, I know what they say on the streets. You know, the person who kills a cop never sees the inside of a jail cell. That's not what the captain would want.
Right.
Yada, yada,
She taught us better than that.
Oh, before that, you see the captain burst into the cell in the middle of the night, and he grabs, he's like, you're going to tell me where your son is right now. And he's like, why would I do that? Because he killed my captain.
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh.
He basically tells him, he's like, this is his only chance of living.
Yeah.
Because if you don't tell me where he is so that we can take him in, he's going to get murdered.
And his King Midas realizes his son done fucked up big time.
Yeah.
So the end of the episode is, of course, this is when we talked about with Chen and Bradford having that little heart-to-heart about this and that or whatever. But they're set up with a roadblock waiting for the guy to show up, and they got police a distance behind him, and he's trying to get out of town. And they take him into custody peacefully.
The captain's like,
sergeant.
The sergeant says, Nolan, go arrest him.
Yeah.
And his TO says, it shouldn't be him. And he goes, no, it has to be him.
Yeah.
And you could see the look on his face. Like, Nolan wasn't sure if he wanted to shoot the guy or arrest him.
Yeah.
But he did. He arrested him. And
that's the thing, is they kept talking about, was like, you know, not arresting. You know, like, we can't kill him.
Yep.
We can't be less than them, you know. Right. And, of course, and then the IA person's there watching from a distance. And she's like, your watch commander told me to come watch this to show how his, you know, how his squad takes, you know.
Does it right.
Does it right. Thank you. And then, actually, Bradford, to my surprise, admits to her, like, you know, near the end, I knew she was using, and I was trying to help her because she's my wife.
And most importantly, he started it off by saying, you were right.
You were right, yeah.
Which was huge, because he is not the type of person to make mistakes.
Right.
But he owned it. Like, he completely owned it right there.
Well, finally he owned it.
Right.
And then, is that settled? And he goes, for now, because I don't think it's like, shit, is she going to come back at him now?
Oh, yeah. Of course she is.
You know? Anyhow, this show has gotten so good over the season.
It's another one of those that I look forward to watching every week.
Yeah. And it helps that we both, let's just say it, we love Nathan Fillion.
Absolutely.
So that helps that factor. But, like, the secondary characters have really grown in personality and depth, and we've gotten to know them, and they are a good unit.
Yeah.
Oh, because the one moment where Chen says, like, you should stay home tomorrow, you shouldn't go in, he's like, you know, it shouldn't last more than a few weeks. He's like, a few weeks. He goes, I'll be so far behind you guys in a few weeks that I'll be still training, and you won't be rookies anymore, and we won't be together anymore.
Yep. And West was like,
oh, that'll never happen.
Yeah.
Of course it would happen.
Yeah, of course it would. And I can't remember her name, but West's TO was even having her own little thing. And they didn't overdo it.
Yeah.
But basically, she's been seeing one of the Ashmore twins.
Right.
The lawyer. And they run into each other, and she's like, oh, seeing a client? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, all right, bye.
She's like, yeah, I won't stand in your way.
Yeah.
And West's like, it's none of my business, but what's going on there?
And did you break up? And she's like, no, we went on a few dates, and now we're not seeing each other anymore. He goes, yeah, that's breaking up.
And then a while later, cuts to him going, you look through his phone, da 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 da. And of course, I realize that's a tone I shouldn't be taking with my TO, but you know.
Yeah. But then she goes to Ashmore, and she says to him, you know, I had a rough childhood. My father left early. You know, my mother never got over it. She treated me bad. You know,
this she had excuses and reasonings.
Yeah. And he basically looked at her and he goes, you're a grown woman.
Yeah.
Everyone had a bad childhood. You sound like my clients. It's what you choose to do as an adult that makes the difference. And you chose to do this. So I'm sorry, I can't trust you.
But then after the captain dies, he calls her up. And, of course, she answers the phone at the fucking roadblock.
That was the most unbelievable part.
And basically, he's like, look, I know what we said in the past. I know what happened. But I want to be there for you, blah, blah,
right
blah.
Now. This is what I want to support you in this because I heard what happened.
And she goes, okay, well, I got to go. I may have to shoot a guy. And then you even go, what? What? And she hangs up.
Yep.
So it was a good episode.
It was a great
episode. It was a damn good episode. And it wasn't a bait and switch. And I'll say this because when I saw the people were like, they said, oh, you know, to get out of this, someone's going to have to die. And they cut between all these people. And it's just like, no one's going to die. So that's typically what happens.
Right.
Or it's going to be like a red shirt.
Right.
Not the captain.
Right.
Because now this, who's going to be the new captain? Or is the watch commander sergeant going to become the captain? And then now we'll get a new watch commander sergeant. You know, because I kind of hate it when shows shake things up real quick like this, real, because it's like, we don't need it.
Right. But
it was good.
It was great.
Because you can even see the captain who in the first episode basically despised Nolan.
And he's driving with Nolan after the arrest, and he tells him, he's like, basically, she said that you should be part of our team because she felt that your experiences in life would make us a better team overall. And he's like, well, I guess I got to live.
Would build us a better house.
Yep.
Yeah. So he's even come kind of around, if you will, to Nolan. All right. So that was a good deep dive.
That was.
Do we want to talk about news and trailers, or do we just want to talk about The Passage?
Let's just do The Passage.
Okay. So we had three episodes to discuss.
Yes. 8, 9, and 10.
You Are Not That Girl Anymore, Stay in the Light, and Last Lesson. And which Stay in the Light and Last Lesson was like a two-part finale, if you will.
And Last Lesson was the most ominous. And the more I watched the episode, the more I'm like, oh, shit, yeah. It kind of says it all. You know something final is coming. You know someone's going down. And you're pretty sure that it's going to be the agent. So,
well,
yeah.
It was a different episode.
So, anyway. So, episode 8. Was when all hell kind of broke loose. Oh. I'm so used to, like, saying three words and then you jump in and take over for me that I just I'm stopping, you know? I've hit the brakes a little bit. He just waved his hand at me, like, continue, so. So, basically, Amy's knocked out. You know, she's laying there unconscious and dealing with Fanning in her head, because this is the period when they go through the transformation and they're either going to come out as vampire slash viral. They really took to calling them virals.
Yes.
So I guess that's what we should call them, because they're not vampires. Vampires aren't real. But, you know, this is where you're either going to come out as a viral or you're going to die.
Right.
And, you know, we saw it happen with the black guy earlier.
Carter, I think his name is. Yeah.
Yeah. They basically, Fanning was like, look, you've got two choices here. You can either die or you can be one of us. And right. He's like, well, I don't want to die. But he didn't want to be one of those either.
Right.
So that's what Amy's going through is, you know, she's got the fever and she's not doing well. Meanwhile, what was his name?
Sykes?
No, the little Weasley guy who...
Oh, the Channing... not Channing.
It was like Glider or something.
I know you're talking about. He's the guy that Fanning's...
Controlling him.
Fanning's Igor.
Yes.
Basically,
yeah. We'll call him Igor. How's that?
Yeah.
He's fully committed to the cause. He's basically going to help Fanning and the others escape.
Yeah.
And he kind of, like... I mean, he cold cocks the agent's wife, and he locks the doctor lady in so that he can go. Now, this is what kind of confused me. They set it up so that the failsafe system now had to be operated by two keys simultaneously, but they didn't put them, like, across the room from each other. They did it so that one person could stand there and turn both keys. Okay,
but here's the thing. The little Bucky Beaver-looking motherfucker, right?
We get great names for these people. Yeah.
He was being controlled.
Right.
In his mind, he saw this guy, one of the Fanning's vampires, if you will, was controlling him, mm-hmm. and he gave him authority, made him his new head of security, on and on and on. But we don't know that, because we don't know he's one of the vampires until right. the agent's like, is this who you were talking to? Is this who you gave all the control to? Who right. changed everything? Yeah. That's why you gave everybody the day off? Like, you know, and said, hey, don't worry about it.
It was a pretty good twist.
Drink it up. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, yeah. Like
it was a pretty good twist.
Yeah, he got played hard.
Hardcore.
And that's why the keys were close enough for one person to activate.
Fair enough. Yeah. So it looked like they were setting it up so that it was more secure, but Fanning had other plans
right.
and basically said, oh, make it look secure, but don't make it be secure.
Right. And I don't know. We're jumping around a lot, I've realized.
Because it was three different episodes. Yeah.
But basically, Amy is in this tunnel that she's riding down, and Fanning's trying to get her to go through the tunnel.
He tells her that at the other end, she'll be one of them, and nobody lives in the tunnel.
Right. So she heads into the tunnel and gets a little ways in, and then turns around, just races right back out and goes right by him, and she wakes up.
Mm-hmm.
So she's okay. So now they're trying to escape.
But they had sedated all of the virals.
Yeah.
When she woke up, they all woke up.
The virals, yeah.
And that was unfortunate.
Right, because now they're kind of fucked. And Carter, that guy, I'm calling him Carter still, ends up biting Agent's wife.
Yep.
And so she's in trouble.
Yep.
And the agent ends up staying down below because now he's got to go back to the doctor who's locked up, who's always like, save yourself,
mm-hmm.
to get the antiviral.
Right.
And she only has two. And then ultimately, through that long and the short of the things, he manages to find, like, an access tunnel to get out of there and brings the antiviral up and saves his wife. And now they only have one dose, but the doctor sacrifices herself.
Mm-hmm.
And they think, because they do this what's it called? It was a name for the code, like the Project Philadelphia or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or basically, it blows up the underground area and seals everybody in.
Yep.
And they're fighting over doing it upstairs, up top. Like, the doctor says we have to do it, and then the agent's ex-friend's like, no, we got to get them out.
Yeah, we have people down there.
And so while they're fighting and threatening each other and having a big dick contest, Amy goes over and pushes the button.
Yep. Because she's listening to Fanning, she knows what's going on, and basically she knows that if these people get out,
yeah,
isn't that when she sees the glimpse of the future too?
Yes.
She sees a glimpse of the future where the world's desolate and Fanning's sitting there just like
dying, and she cuts her hand to save him, yes.
Yeah. and he drinks the blood a little bit, and she later on says, "I saw the future." And the agent's like, "Go on."
Yeah, I like, yeah, that was good. Continue.
Yeah, because most, you know, most of the shows, these people are written so that they're like, you know, well, what you saw wasn't true. But he's just like, she's like, "What would you say if I told you I saw the future?" I'd say, "Go on."
Yeah.
And, yeah, she said that she knew that the world was going to be destroyed.
Yeah.
And that even the vampires were dying. Because somebody says that to Fanning at one point. They're like, "You need humans. You need humans to actually survive. You need the blood.
Right.
Why destroy them all? Why turn them all?" And Fanning's just like, "Man, why does anybody have kids?" Okay.
So during the big escape after the explosion, the virals get out.
Mm-hmm.
So which leads me to believe that Fanning knew if she pushed the button, they could get out that way.
Right. Because they were supposed to be buried underground. They were supposed to be crushed, buried, and yet
None of them were.
No. Nope.
So the virals get out, so now they're trying to escape the bunker.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, fuck, world's doomed. And through the whole fighting and the chaos and trying to escape and everything, the agent and Amy and his wife manage to get away. They have the one vial of
cure,
if you will. That's the only one there is. And they need to get away. They're trying to get it to the CDC.
Yep.
So the CDC can do replicate it.
Yes.
Because they're the only ones that are basically can replicate it.
Mm-hmm.
And during this whole thing, the agent's friend, who was the head of security there, he ends up getting stove up real bad.
Oh, yeah. Like his back's broken or something. Like, yeah. He's just laying there on the ground, can't move.
And he's just waiting for someone to come kill him. And then
Shauna comes.
Shauna shows up.
And again, I love the way that this show does the mental power of the virals. Because everything just shifts, and you've got these people who are talking to each other as normal, but it's all mental. You know, this would be perfect if they had, like, an X-Men Charles Xavier kind of thing.
Yes.
It's that kind of, we're talking inside of your mind. Here's our normal versions of ourselves. We're carrying on a full conversation. And then they'll flash back, and you see Shauna in her, you know, blooded, fanged out version, and Buddy Boy is just laying on the ground crippled.
Yeah.
And then we go back and they're talking like normal people. It's just, it's beautiful. I love how they do it.
And she basically says, like, "I can save you." And my first thought is, oh, he's going to turn her. She's going to turn him into a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he says no. And then you look and it cuts to now we're in current times. And she's just sitting with him.
I had a problem with that too.
Because basically, to me, I got the implication that he said no. And so she's like, "All right, I'm just going to stay with you. I'm going to stay with you until you die then. Because that way you're not going to die alone."
Mm-hmm.
And that's the last we see of them.
I thought he said, though, that he did want to live.
See, I don't remember. I thought he said no, or I wouldn't want to live that way, or something like that. I don't know. But obviously, we find out later he said yes. But she didn't turn him into a vampire. She turned him into whatever.
The big doctor there.
Yeah.
The same thing that he's got going for him.
Yeah. Where basically he's beholden to her.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets the long life, and the other vampires don't attack him or go after him. Excuse me, and he doesn't have to. He can be in the sunlight, and he doesn't have the thirst for the blood.
He's a daywalker.
Yeah, he's a daywalker basically. Yeah, without, and he doesn't have vampire teeth or whatever.
Right.
So,
but he's helping Shauna by delivering her a person at a time.
Bad guys.
Yep. Yeah, he hunts down bad guys. He's a skip trace, basically.
Where we are now is the final episode, the last lesson. And like you said, it takes place 6 months later.
Yep.
And we find out, 30 days later.
Oh, is it?
It's 30 days later. And basically what it is the doctor and the black woman that was the agent's, like, CO and the Army or Marines or whatever it was they were in,
mm-hmm.
they've made it to this place, this safe haven, if you will, and he's trying to make the new formula. And then the agent and his wife and Amy, they're hiding up like in the off the grid in like Oregon or something like that, waiting for the CDC to show up to pick them up and to get the cure so they can replicate it.
Because they, for some reason, they believe that the CDC is coming to them.
Well, that's what they're under the impression of. However, you know, the internet's down and there's no contact and this and that and everything. And then you have this guy who's tracking. Oh, no, the internet's still around, actually. Electricity's still around.
Yep.
He's waiting for it to go down.
Yep.
And you have this guy who is tracking everything. And he's got it all online, but he's got it on paper, too, just in case. Like, when you go in town.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, he's like, there's 10 hot spots. And you look at the map of the hotspots, and basically the Asian figures out, because he's collected all these people, all the virals went home.
Yeah.
They're not with Fanning. They're not together. They all went home and then kind of created their own little nests in their home area, except Shauna, who's in Vegas. And that's where the doctor is, and the Asian's friend.
Jonas is the doctor.
Yeah. No, anyways, that's where they all are.
Yep.
Basically. And they find out, like, the CDC is gone.
Yeah. It was destroyed.
It was destroyed.
Much so, like in The Walking Dead.
Exactly. The CDC was destroyed. And all these other countries, they're afraid that these vampires are going to invade their countries. Mm-hmm. So, like, people are cutting ties with the United States and this and that. And it's a very ominous ending, you're right. Because, so...
The agent's wife goes to the CDC. She says, I'm going to leave and I'm going to go try to help with this cure. You've got to stay here in case they come for it, but I'll go out and see if I can get somebody to come up here.
And here's the other thing. When they had a run-in with one of the new vampire kids, one of the virals in town.
They didn't go for it.
They didn't attack her because her blood probably, you know what I mean?
She had the cure.
Right.
And for some reason, they don't want to go after her. It wasn't that they were repelled. It was almost like she wasn't even there.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just kind of ignored her. So she's like, I've got to use this to my advantage.
Right.
And I'm going out.
So she heads out.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fanning comes to Amy because he's trying to convince her to eat, feed. Because she hasn't been eating. She's pretending to eat. She's not feeding. She's craving blood. She's a viral.
Right.
She's a vampire. And so one of their neighbors or whatever kind of shows up. And
another character from Lost.
Yes, which is funny. So here we are at the house now. We have the woman and her son, like the woman who owns the store and her son or whatever. And why are they at the house?
I don't remember why they came, but Fanning basically infects this guy, which is weird. I don't know how he infected him. If he was like, was he physically there? It felt like he was just in Amy's mind. But then like the neighbor comes walking in and he draws his fingernail over the guy's neck and he goes, there you go.
Yeah.
Now he's infected. You're going to have to kill him.
Yeah.
Because she was saying, I'll never kill anyone,
yeah.
And he's like, let's put that to the test.
So, I don't know why they were there, but they were, and they were talking to the agent, and then, they're there saying, hey, have you seen Charlie? We haven't seen him in a while, blah, blah, blah. And Amy's like, yeah, he's outside. He's infected. And so the agent goes outside. Sure enough, he is. And he's just like, you got to do me a favor, buddy. You got to kill me before I turn, because I don't want to. And then he turns, and then cut to gunshot, and then the agent walks in, and his neck's been bitten. And then the woman and her son want to kill the agent because they got to kill him because he's going to turn. He's going to kill us. Sorry, honey. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Amy kills them.
Brutally.
Like, brutally bites them, drinks their blood, kills them and everything.
Yep.
Then she takes the antidote and injects
the agent
to save his life. And then she basically writes him a note and leaves because she's ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
She's ashamed of what she's done. She doesn't want the agent to ever think negatively of him.
Right.
This and that. So then we get this long monologue of her. And we see of her talking about how she's ashamed of herself. She doesn't want the agent to think negative of her, you know, that she loved him and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then you see all the other countries launching, I don't know if they were nuclear warheads, but bombing the fuck out of the United States.
Yep.
And that's how the U.S. is now this wasteland. And now we're like 96 years into the future.
97.
Yeah. And Amy is still Amy. And she's got her bow and arrow because we see her working on it with him earlier in the episode.
Yep.
And these virals are coming at her, which they must be starving if they're coming at her because she's viral.
But remember, in her vision of the future, she was feeding Fanning.
Right.
So there's got to be something about her blood that they're craving. And remember that the whole key here was that tried to find somebody who was young enough because they said that they would
be resistant.
Turn.
Yeah. But she did turn.
She turned, but not the way that they did. Like,
no.
Think about Shauna.
She's a daywalker. She is a daywalker. Yes.
Yes. Because she can actually drink and feed.
And so she takes out some of these virals with her bow and arrow and kills them. And then we see her, going to a town?
Yeah. She basically, she lays them to rest. You know, she tells them no more suffering and leaves the arrow in them for whatever reason.
You know, if you pull a stake out of the wooden heart of a vampire, it's going to heal.
You know who else dies by a wooden stake to the heart?
Everyone else ever.
But yeah, so she's heading to a city, and she essentially is saying that she believes the agent is still out there.
Yes.
Because the cure that she gave him is the same thing that his wife had, which was what the buddy there had. Yeah. It essentially stops the aging process.
So when the episode ends, and it has been renewed for a second season yet. So the episode ends, we don't know anyone's fate other than Amy and what they did and what happened in those 97 years and what happened to his wife and what happened to him and everything else. But man, this show is excellent.
This show felt to me like a really long horror suspense movie.
Yeah.
Like it had a beginning, middle, and end like a movie would.
Like three acts, yeah.
If they didn't renew it, I would be perfectly happy because it was so well done.
Yeah.
Like I really enjoyed watching the story and then seeing the glimpse of the future and then like, boom, I want to see it come back. I really do.
Oh, I do too. Because
I want to see like what happened in between. I want to see, you know, what's happening in the future. But if they said, no, we're just not bringing it back because, you know, the didn't get ratings or whatever, I'd be okay with where it's at right now.
Have you noticed that there seems to be a pattern building that we're enjoying shows more and more that have limited number of episodes per season?
Absolutely.
It's like the old pattern of 20-something episodes in a season just isn't necessary anymore.
No, it's not. Netflix, in fact, it's a little annoying in places.
Netflix especially. I think the advent of complete seasons on DVD started this because you can sit home and binge a season on DVD. You had to switch discs around and this and that. And then Netflix and Hulu made it even more accessible to binge a whole season online of old stuff and now new stuff.
Right.
And I really, I think more and more the old television regime of having 20 episode seasons or whatever it is just kind of fall to the wayside.
And again, what was great about this was, yes, they kind of left it open. They kind of left it suspenseful.
Yeah.
But more than that, they did give it finality.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much to wonder, but at the same time, I'm okay with wondering it.
Right.
You know, what happened to Shauna Babcock? Because she said to the guy, she was like, I've had it with this. I'm not going – because he was like, I'm helping you. I'm keeping you fed so that you don't destroy this place. You don't turn a bunch of people. And finally, she was like, I don't want to be under your thumb anymore. I'm tired of this. We're not living a life together. We're not having a relationship. You're just, you know, feeding me like I'm your pet. She's like, I'm going to eat this guy, and it's the last time, which was kind of a funny line. So what happened with them? What happened with the agent's wife? What happened with the agent?
Yep.
Again, would love to see more of this show. I'm perfectly fine if I can't, which is weird to think.
Yeah, I just...
because it felt like a movie.
I worry about it turning into The Walking Dead.
Which a lot of people are already comparing it to, with the CDC being destroyed, the world being destroyed.
We have vampires instead of walkers. Yep. We have virals instead of walkers. And anyhow. News and trailers? And we'll wrap this bad boy up.
Trailers and wrap it up.
A little over an hour and a half by the time we're done, probably, unless we go on a rampage. So Castle Rock Season 2 is currently filming underway in Massachusetts. And this season is going to be focusing on Annie Wilkes.
Well, this season
young Annie Wilkes.
It's going to be it's going to explore a feud between warring clans that comes to a boil when budding psychopath Annie Wilkes, King's nurse from hell, gets waylaid in Castle Rock.
Yes, she is. Annie Wilkes is from Misery.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kathy Bates' character, Misery, played by Lizzie Kaplan in the series.
Yes. Tim Robbins is going to be in this.
Yep.
Head of the Merrow crime family. They're mentioning Jerusalem's Lot from the TV show Salem's Lot will be brought up in this season. So it'll be interesting.
This is going to be the first time. Like, we had the jail. You know, we had Shawshank prison in the first one, which was like, oh, cool. This is going to be the first time, though, that we have an actual character from his books.
Yes.
Viewing. I like it.
I do kind of find this interesting that the two warring factions are a crime family in the Somali population.
That is a little...
Yeah.
Yeah.
for those who aren't familiar, Lewiston, Maine has a very huge Somali population. Like, there was a huge influx of Somali refugees that somehow had landed in Lewiston, Maine.
I think they landed in Bangor, and then they repopulated to Lewiston because
that's where they are now, regardless.
They had their doors open.
So this is – there's a lot of frustration. Maine is – we're in the Northeast. We're a very white state. And so when this happened 20 years ago now, these influx of Somalis, there was a lot of hostilities and tension over it. So, you know, I'm curious how, if it's going to mirror. I mean, there's no feuding war, but there's a lot of things I'm wondering if it's going to mirror.
Right.
I mean, it's a lot different now. It's been 20 years. But and when this first started happening, editorials in the paper, headlines, people, not rioting, but setting fires to homes, just all kinds of kind of craziness that was happening back then when they first popped up in here. And then the movie Black Hawk Down came out. And that started a lot of hate and discontent because that is about a Black Hawk helicopter that crashes in Somalia and all these Americans getting killed. And one of the Americans that was killed is a sniper. And there is a road in Lewiston that is named after him because that's where he grew up. And now the Somalis live there. And there was a lot of people that were not happy about that. Yeah. So it'll be interesting. When I saw that, I was like,
I hope they're careful around it.
When I saw that, I was like, oof, it's a little too close to home, I think. I mean, granted, it's been 20 years, but I mean, it popped right up in my mind.
Yeah.
And I could give a shit less about it. I just remember I went to school in Wales, Oak Hill High School in Wales, or Sebattis, if you will, my senior year, or my high school years, I mean. And this was all happening around my junior, senior year, much of it was. And it's, 20 minutes from Lewiston. So, like, I really remember when this happened and all this shit going on because it was next door, if you will. So, yeah, I saw that and I was just like, all right, we'll see. Got some trailers?
Yeah.
Oh, I got another bit of a news. Did you see? Maybe you didn't. I don't know. Orion Pictures posted on their Facebook page. Might have been their Twitter. I don't know. It's a video at the Hollywood Bowl. Nothing yet? It's with Alex Winters and Keanu Reeves?
Yes.
Did you see it now?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Basically, they're announcing that they're going to be filming Bill and Ted Face the Music later this year. And they're thanking the fans for their outcry of wanting to see this movie. And then they put a release date up, August 21st, 2020.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy we're getting a third Bill and Ted movie.
This late in the game.
Alex Winters must be excited as fuck.
Right.
Because, like, Keanu Reeves, he's made a little bit of career for himself. It's a couple of franchises, you know. But Alex Winters, other than Bill and Ted and Lost Boys, I can't think of anything he's been in.
Yeah, I can't think of anything off the top of my head either. But he'll probably say, like...
Or Alex Winter, sorry.
Yeah.
He's just one of them.
He'll probably say that, you know, he's been living his best life as a father. And, you know, trying to do the dad thing right. Blah, blah, blah.
Documentary. He's been directing a lot of stuff.
Oh. Porn?
Nope. Little documentaries about different things, it looks like. As an actor, Into the Dark TV series.
Yeah, it's the Hulu TV series.
He's the voice.
Oh. Isn't that the 12-month anthology?
In the episode, The Voice. He's the voice and the body.
Oh.
Anyone Can Quantum, Grand Piano, Robot Chicken, Medium Rare, Ben 10. Yeah, he ain't done shit. He ain't done much.
Sounds like he's doing some voice acting.
Yeah, Bill and Ted, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and then basically not much of anything after that. Some voice acting stuff. And then it says, right, they've already got it on here. Bill and Ted Face the Music. He's Bill S. Preston.
Nice.
And I'm Ted.
Esquire.
Yeah, and I'm Ted Theodore Logan, and together we are Wild Stallions. Anyways.
As of 12:02 this morning, the Disney-Fox merger was complete.
Yep.
And Disney now owns the world.
No announcements, though, coming
Yes, today. One announcement.
Oh, what?
They said that Deadpool is the only franchise that is coming over superhero-wise.
Yeah.
It's the only one coming over intact. Everything else, basically, they're saying Fantastic Four and X-Men, they have no plans to continue what's been going on. So Dark Phoenix will be the last one of that.
And then probably the New Mutants movie, like I've heard a long time, is going to end up on Hulu.
Probably.
Yeah.
And other than that, they're going to reboot it all.
So are they officially saying that it's all out of canon now?
No, they've just said that they're not moving forward with any of it. I have a feeling that once Marvel Studios gets their hooks in it and they produce the first mutant thing or Fantastic Four,
yeah,
then they'll say that's out of canon, which we all know it's out of canon.
It's hard for me because I thought they did a good job with the X-Men movies.
I did too.
You know, like, now I didn't say I loved every single one of them, but I thought they did a good job with the new X-Men movies.
First Class was great.
First Class was excellent. And I loved Hugh Jackman as Wolverine bridging the gap between all of this X-Men stuff. You know, literally without him, there's no... Jean-Luc Picard there, Patrick Stewart,
mm-hmm,
and Ian
McKellen.
Yeah. They also returned up in the new X-Men flick as the older versions of themselves.
Yep.
So that was cool as well. Yes. But really, Hugh Jackman as Logan really has bridged the gap for all that stuff. And if they're not going to bring him into the MCU and they're going to go, you know, with a new Wolverine and new everything else, I guess I'm okay with that. But, man, I'd love to see. I get it.
But remember, like they said, Jackman's like 50 years old.
I know.
The amount of workout that he had to do to have the Wolverine body was insane.
Just leave your shirt on.
No. I feel for the guy. Terminator, Dark Fate is the official name of the sixth movie in the series. But technically it's the third movie because James Cameron is producing this one and has thrown out the rest of it.
So his sequel that he just did, is that no longer canon too?
No, this is he didn't do that one. He didn't have the rights to it back then, the Terminator Genesis, and that is no longer canon.
Okay.
That was not James Cameron had nothing to do with that. As soon as that one was at the box office, shortly thereafter.
Oh, so this is a direct sequel to Judgment Day.
Yes, this is a direct sequel to Judgment Day.
Okay. It's going to star Arnold Schwarzenegger, Linda Hamilton, Jason Crow.
Yes.
Okay, so all these different reboots we've gotten in this canon are all just
gone. In fact, James Cameron is very adamant about saying none of them counted. They all sucked. This is what's going to count. He's very protective of this franchise, apparently, for some reason.
Okay. Well, okay. Here's the thing. Rise of the Machines. See, Arnold Schwarzenegger's in this, though. That's the thing. Like, he's in Rise of the Machines, mm-hmm, you know. He was not in Salvation, right? That was the one in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, like you said, Genesis, he's in this again, and they kind of rebooted it.
Mm-hmm.
But all that's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
Those three movies are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And the TV series.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Tim Miller's directing it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Deadpool 1. So. But yeah, the official name of it is Dark Fate, and it has a release date of November 1st.
This year. Oh, I watched the movie I want to talk about. I forgot.
Okay.
Okay. Any other news?
Yep.
What you got? I have three trailers I want to bring up.
I do as well. Okay. This was very interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of came out of left field. Jonathan Rhys Davies.
Yeah.
Did an interview recently.
First of all, he's alive.
Yeah.
I thought he died.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. He did an interview recently and they were asking him if he's working on anything currently. And he said that him and Jerry O'Connell.
No. It's the first thing I thought of after Indiana Jones when you said his name.
Him and Jerry O'Connell are really fighting to not do a reboot, but to do a revival of Sliders. And they're talking to NBC about this. And I guess right now the only tricky part is who owns the rights to it.
Sliders was good.
Sliders was great.
I enjoyed Sliders.
I loved Sliders.
Yeah.
So they're talking about trying to revive it.
Talking about a TV show, not burgers, people.
Yeah.
Huh.
Sliders was, it was like Quantum Leap, except for this group of scientists found themselves every week traveling through a wormhole to an alternate Earth. And their goal was to always get back to Earth Prime. But they'd find these alternate Earths, you know, yeah. Nazi Earths and stuff like that. And it always was very entertaining. So I'd love that. This wasn't just like, you know, oh, we've talked about it. They're actively calling NBC and trying to see who has the rights and whether or not they can revive it.
Good luck to them.
I'd be game for it. I think that's all I got for news.
I watched a trailer I shared with you, the new the Joker trailer.
You know, after I watched that, I actually Googled it and looked up to see if this was fake.
Fake, yeah.
Or if it was fan-made or if somebody had spliced together some of the shittiest footage that they could find of Joaquin Phoenix. Was it shot on a GoPro? Was somebody on meth behind the camera? Like, why was this trailer put out? And all I could find was that the theater released it. The studio released it. Because they want people to be excited about it.
This trailer, first of all, it looks like a crappy low-budget flick.
That's why I kept looking it up.
Based on the dialogue, like, it doesn't have that polished feel and look. I mean, it looks like it was shot on a camcorder.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's
not even like a smartphone.
And we're not saying it doesn't look like a current superhero movie.
Yeah, no.
This doesn't look like a current movie.
Take away the aspect of this is a Joker origin story.
Which nobody wants.
Just saying, take away that aspect of it. Remove that from it.
Yeah.
Watching the trailer as a standalone movie, I'm like, no one's ever going to watch this fucking garbage. Like, this would not entice anybody to go see this.
It had no story behind it. Yeah. It had no plot. It had no compelling characters.
No sense whatsoever.
None.
Then, look at now put back into the factor that they're saying, oh, this is the Joker origin story. You're going to have a lot of fanboys that are going to be like, I'm going to watch it because of what it is. But, oh.
No, I'm not paying money for that.
No. Well, that's what I mean. I don't think I'd go to I'm not going to the theaters to see it. But when it hits Redbox.
Nope.
Really?
I'd sooner watch Batman vs. Superman again.
Well, that's saying something.
I'd sooner watch a double feature of Batman vs. Superman and Cabin Fever than watch whatever this piece of shit is that's coming out.
Now, I'm going to have to disagree with you there because this Joker movie has to be nowhere near as long as those are combined. So it'd be less painful to watch the Joker movie.
I don't think so.
Based on time frame.
Have you seen Joaquin Phoenix recently?
No. Well,
every minute watching him is like 10 minutes.
Fair enough.
With your nuts in a
box. My buddy Aaron brought up the point that he said, trailer looks like it spends the whole time explaining how he becomes the Joker, and you don't even see the Joker until like the last 10 minutes of the movie. Like, that's the feel he got.
Yeah, and who wants that?
Nobody wanted this movie. Well, obviously Warner Brothers did, but what I mean is fan-wise, nobody wanted this movie.
Half of the appeal of the Joker, at least half of the appeal of the Joker, other than his psychosis, is the fact that he is an unknown force of nature.
Right.
He is fucking Christopher Nolan.
They're going to humanize him.
They couldn't even find anything on his clothing that was identifiable.
Yeah.
You know? I don't want them to humanize this guy. I want him to be an evil spirit. I want him to be a force of nature.
No, they're going to humanize him in this. It looks like
barely, because Joaquin Phoenix is barely a human being. Yeah. Oh.
It just looks like garbage.
It made me angry.
So what's funny is, I sent you that, and then my phone beeped while I'm driving home, and I was driving by your road, rocking up big time in my car, but I'm only going like 15 miles an hour through the school zone. So, like, I know people can see me. I don't care. Enter Sandman was on my radio. I'm going to groove. And then I get a message from you that says, what the fuck was that? And I thought, like, you saw me drive by. So I'm like, I'm driving. So I call you and I'm like, voicemail, whatever. And I'm like, hey, blah, 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 blah. Oh my God, I just realized.
Yeah.
So I have to do this long.
And I did the same thing. Like, I woke up, I looked at that trailer and I'm like, the fuck was that? And then I went and jumped in the shower. Yeah. I got out and I'm like, no, I'm not answering my phone right now. I'm naked and wet.
Yeah.
Forget it. So.
So anyways, I thought it was funny. Stranger Things season 3 trailer. Instead of taking place at Halloween time, takes place in the summer. So we're going to release it in the summer?
Yeah. The kids are older. We're not kids anymore. What'd you think? We were just going to sit in my basement and play games the whole summer?
They address the fact that they're growing up.
Yeah.
Which is responsible thing to do.
Yeah.
Still looks fucking awesome.
Oh, it does. It looks great. Great soundtrack. Mm-hmm. You know, they got a little Bob O'Reilly in there. Yeah. Oh, it's looking good.
I mean, essentially, there's a big monster creature you see at the end of the trailer, but otherwise, like...
Watching Dustin and what's his name there, like marking out over the lightsaber fight, you know, the girl behind the counter is like, how many little kids are you friends with? And he's like...
Anyhow.
Yeah.
Looks great.
Yes.
Looks really good. What other trailers did you watch?
Toy Story 4.
How was that?
It was actually good. It's twist. Like, I don't know if you've watched the Toy Story movies.
Mm-hmm.
The third one got really dark, especially in the end.
I watched the third one.
Really dark. This one is even darker.
Really?
Like, you know how, have you seen any of the trailers where you see that, like, spork that has, like, little wire arms on him and stuff? He's one of the main characters. Because basically, the new girl that they are the toys of, she makes him an art class, and his name is Forky. And now this is her best friend.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Woody's like, hey, this is the most important toy to her, and we've got to make sure that he feels welcome and blah, blah, blah. He doesn't want to feel welcome. He doesn't want to be a toy. He's a fork. And he says, it's like this existential thing. He's like, I am meant to eat stuff. I am a fork. I should not be existing right now. And he throws himself out of a moving vehicle because he doesn't want to exist as a toy.
Wow.
It's weird.
That is weird.
It's dark.
That is dark.
Kind of interesting. Yeah. I'm not going to go to the theater to see it, but yeah, like for little kids, I'm sure that it'll be, oh, look, toys and blah, blah, blah. But as an adult who gets into psychology, I'm looking at this and I'm like, wow, this is kind of twisted. So yeah. What was the other trailer you watched?
The ninth film.
If you say in the Saw franchise.
No. The ninth film from director Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, yeah.
I didn't watch that trailer.
I watched the trailer.
Okay.
And basically, okay, the movie is set in 1969. A mm-hmm. television actor and his stunt double embark on an odyssey to make a name for themselves in the film industry. Leonardo DiCaprio plays Rick Dalton. He's mm-hmm. the actor. And Brad Pitt is Cliff Booth, who is his longtime good friend and stunt double.
Mm-hmm.
So the trailer looks like a big, lively, happy-go-lucky, blah, 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 great-looking flick. It's about the fucking Manson murders.
Yeah.
That's not brought up once in the trailer at all.
No.
Go ahead.
I haven't seen the trailer, but it reminds me. Did you realize that there is a second Charles Manson movie coming out? And do you know who they have playing Charles Manson?
What was the first one? Helter Skelter from years ago?
This one.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, like, they're both coming out at the same
time? Oh, yeah, no.
Do you know who they have playing Charles Manson, Mike, in this other movie?
Nope.
Matt fucking Smith.
Really?
The 11th Doctor is Charles Manson. Yeah. Kelly sent me a trailer of it the other day, and I went, I can't fucking watch this. It's Matt Smith as Charles Manson. Those are two polar opposites. The Doctor and Charles Manson. And I don't know why suddenly we're this obsessed. You know, Deep Impact and Armageddon.
It was 50 years ago. That's why. The murders happened in 1969. It's 2019. Anniversary.
Still. Do we really have to sensationalize
it? I'm sorry. You're saying the obsession with movies coming out at the same time that are similar. Like Twister and Tornado.
Yes.
Which Tornado was a much better film than Twister. Because Tornado starred... Tornado starred Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, the movie that he's in is called Charlie Says. Probably won't be as big of a film as Once Upon a Time in Hollywood because, you know... Quentin Tarantino's directing the other one, but.
Damn.
Yeah, dude, look at that.
That looks like.
That looks like the day that time broke.
That doesn't look like Matt Smith. That reminds me of
Charles Manson.
Well, no, but it reminds me more of Peter Faraday from Lost.
Fair enough.
Anyways. That's crazy.
So the movie looks okay? aside from the fact that it's about...
Well, no, the movie looks great, but when you watch the trailer, I get to watching the trailer, I'm like, this is about the Shannon Tate murders and Charles Manson. Like, that's not at all what this... this is not the vibe they're giving me at all in this. I'm going to watch it. I love Tarantino's films.
Yep.
I'm going to go to the theaters and watch this. I watch a lot of his movies repeatedly because I enjoy his style of cinema.
Right.
So,
speaking of going to the theater, do you realize what comes out this weekend?
Us. I realize that comes out tomorrow at 7 p.m.
Oh, wow.
If I didn't have the three kids tomorrow and it wasn't Wesley's birthday, I'd be like, well, I'm going. And if they had a 10 o'clock showing, I'd be going. But they don't. The latest showing in Augusta is 7 o'clock.
Boo.
Yeah.
It's been getting phenomenal reviews. Some are saying that you have to watch it twice. I'm very excited. I will be going to the theater to see this.
So, did you know that Matt Smith is playing Morbius' friend in the upcoming Morbius film from the MCU?
No.
And that Jared
Leto... That's not MCU. That's the Sony universe. It's a spin-off of Spider-Man.
Okay, it's not part of the... Okay, it's an adjunct to the MCU. Sorry, I didn't... Okay, yeah. All right, never mind. But still, Jared Leto is playing Michael Morbius.
Yeah. Not sure how I feel about that.
Well, he fucked up Joker, so... I guess we'll see.
And some people still think that he didn't fuck up Joker. Marvel Studios releases the Avengers Endgame synopsis.
Don't care. I didn't watch the last trailer. I don't care. Staying out of it.
Now all of our listeners are like, but we want to hear it, Mike.
I'll plug my ears. You're just one person.
You're just one guy, Mike. The world doesn't revolve around you. Not actually going to say it.
What?
You heard me. You heard every word I said.
Anyhow, did you watch any movies?
No. But I bought a movie, which I haven't done in forever.
Like a DVD or one of those voodoo things.
DVD.
What'd you buy?
Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, yeah, it came out. I'm looking forward to watching that.
It's a phenomenal movie. I brought it over so that you could borrow it and watch it.
Oh, thanks, because I got Once Upon a Deadpool sitting over there.
Because you really need to watch this movie.
Okay.
This was a phenomenal movie, and I don't just mean that because it won those awards. The first time I watched this, I went, this is fucking phenomenal. And I wish that they did more superhero movies like this. Don't get me wrong. I love the live action stuff. But this was an animated, beautifully animated.
Yep.
It had twists. It had turns. It had death and consequences. And it was just so well done that I walked out of the theater saying, yeah, I'm going to own that the moment it comes out.
Okay.
So I highly recommend it. I brought it over. I've got a digital copy that I'm going to watch again this week. I'm hoping you watch it.
Okay. So
that when we talk next week, we can discuss this movie.
Okay.
What was the movie you watched?
Creed 2.
I thought you had seen that one.
Nope. I watched the first Creed, and remember, if you remember correctly, I wasn't a big fan of it. Thanks.
Correct.
And I wasn't a big fan of it because...
Because you're racist.
No, I'm not racist. It wasn't a Rocky movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to...
Rocky was in it.
Exactly. But it wasn't a Rocky movie. And I wanted a Rocky movie. And that's not what I got. So it was really annoying. However...
I've already used the code, by the way, so you can't jack it.
Why is it in here, then? Rude did the same thing. Yeah, but throw it away. It's just a piece of paper now.
It came with the DVD.
This is a worthless piece of paper now.
I don't care. It came with it. You know what? The sleeve is a useless piece of paper. I don't need to see that it's Spider-Man. I could put the Blu-ray in to see that it's Spider-Man.
No, this is a very important piece of artwork that so you know what it is on the shelf so you can read the spine. This is useless.
That's not useless if I take that out, though.
Anyhow.
So... You didn't like Creed 1 because you don't like Michael B. Jordan.
No, because it wasn't a Rocky movie.
Okay.
Rocky was in it. Paul Creed's son's in it.
Mm-hmm.
Da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
It wasn't a Rocky movie.
Okay.
It didn't even have the Rocky movie feel to it.
Okay.
Okay? And they didn't have the Rocky music in it at all. Which, It's called Creed. Rocky's in it. You know, like, so Creed 2, though, it's a Rocky movie.
Really?
Felt like a Rocky movie. It didn't have the Rocky, it had the Rocky music in it, but not through the whole thing. Like, there's a scene earlier on in the hospital and, or somewhere, no, and it wasn't a lot, it doesn't matter. But Rocky and Adonis, they're talking and they're kind of having a, like, a father-son moment, if you will. And in the background, very lightly, is that, like, that kind of little sad Rocky music that they kind of, they would play that was very recognizable. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yes, perfect. Like, it added to the film for me. The story was very much a Rocky story, like all the other Rocky movies except for Creed. In this one, Creed is battling Ivan Drago's sons.
Yep.
So it's really cool to see the actor. What's his name?
Dolph Lundgren.
Dolph Lundgren in the movie, you know, as Ivan Drago again. Mm-hmm. But you're seeing, for the first time, we're seeing what happened to him after the fight, after he lost, where basically he was disowned by his country and his
people. I was wondering about,
you know, that. And kind of was living as like, and his wife left him. And we see Bridget Nielsen in this movie a couple of times, and she has some dialogue, but for the most part,
does she look like trash?
Actually, she does. She was cleaned up nice.
Okay.
You know, she was cleaned up nice, but,
because real life has not been kind.
No, it hasn't. But she was cleaned up nice, and I think they did a good job limiting her screen time.
But, that's a nice way to put it.
But she's in there, and she has a massive effect on there because, like, this is her son as well, and she basically abandoned them because of stature and namesake and got with someone else. It doesn't matter. But, like, you really do – like, and you feel bad for Drago's son, who is not only living in his dad's shadow, but his dad's – basically forcing him to box.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad is living vicariously through his son to have his son go and fix the Drago name. And, you know, and his son's just like, these people abandoning you. We don't need them. Like, why do you want them in your life? They left you. They abandoned you. They deserted you. We don't need them. Why are you kissing their ass? Why are you glad handing them, basically? And Drago's like, because I need this back, you know? So it's, you know, he kind of sees the light near the end or whatever you will, but it's a great movie. You know, Adonis has got to come back from adversity, yada, yada, yada. It's kind of like the Rocky III scene, kind of themed, if you will, where they fight twice in the movie, Adonis and Drago do. You know, of course, Felicia Rashad's back in it as Apollo's wife. Can't think of her name. No, it's
Huxtable.
No,
Claire
Huxtable. Nope, that's the TV show she was on. Her last name would at least be Creed. And then in the big fight scene, the final fight scene of the movie there between Creed and Drago, they play the Rocky music for the montage, and it just gets you into it, and it's just like, so it was, I really
think that was. Do you think that a lot of the fans complain at the first movie?
Yes.
And that's why they said, oh, well, we'll give them what they want.
Yes.
We'll wait until the end and then pump them up. And
yeah, I'm pretty sure that's exactly what happened. Yeah.
Gotcha.
They were just like, oh, we heard you. You didn't like the first movie because it wasn't a Rocky movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Rocky movie. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And it told a great story, had some great dialogue in it. You know, you saw a good lot of different perspectives. It was cool to see, like, you know, Ivan Drago back and just kind of, you know, you're revisiting some of these characters. It was a very well made movie, good story, well scripted. I really enjoyed it.
Nice.
I will end up buying this to add to my Rocky collection because I have Rockies 1 through 6 on a Blu-ray collection I picked up. I had them on DVD except for 6, and then I've just now upgraded them to a DVD collection, a Blu-ray collection. So I'll probably end up buying the first Creed because I'm a completionist about certain things. Don't know if I'll ever watch it, but I don't know if they're going to do a third Creed movie.
Okay, so hold on a second.
Yeah,
let's go back a step.
Yeah,
you're giving me 38.2 pounds of shit because I have a little sleeve of paper inside this Blu-ray case of a movie that I fucking love.
Right,
and yet you're saying that you're going to go out and buy a movie that you hate just so that it can sit there next to its brother on the shelf and never be touched again. Go fuck yourself.
What?
No. You don't get to give me shit because I keep a piece of paper in there because it came with the
sit. But it's a piece of paper with a digital code on it that is no longer valid.
You're going to buy a Blu-ray to take up valuable shelf space. You're going to spend money on something that you will never, ever, ever watch again because you didn't like it.
I might watch it. I don't know.
And you're going to spend money on this thing just so that you don't have a gap in your collection.
Yeah.
I'm speechless.
Well, I guess that's a good thing to end on then.
I'm speechless.
You can find us on our social medias. I'm at SuperstarML.
I'm at speechless, apparently.
Excellent. It's the Quantum Geek G33K. That's it. It's the show.